Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory with great warranties. Pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. They go over every vehicle. And a great service department that takes care of routine oil changes, inspections, diagnostics, whatever it may be, all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Our play-by-play call of the day.
That one's pulled deep down the right field line toward the pole. It is gone! It just grazed off the pole. It's his second solo home run of the night. And that ball was mashed. That is powerful, that swing.
That is what you call back-legging it. Did they say that would have been out on all 30?
That's a Tommy McCarthy. Another big Kyle Schwarber home run. All right. Well, if we continue to hit home runs with our guest, Mike DeCourcy, Sporting News. Such great respect for Mike. Mike, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Hey, Steve. How you doing?
Doing well. Mike, what was your first thought when you heard about the news on Thursday that this was going to happen? Because it certainly, at least on my end, it felt like it just came out of the blue.
Well, I was when I first saw on Twitter the wording that it was possible, although it hadn't been verified yet, I was like, oh, please. Do I have to deal with this on the way into the July 4th weekend?
Yes.
And then I saw John Wilner's name on it, a terrific writer for the San Jose Mercury News. And I said, doggone it, I do have to deal with it today.
Yeah.
That, you know, when things like this happen, Steve, the first thing you think of is, how does it affect me right now? And not, is this a good idea or bad idea? No, this is more work for me. That was my initial reaction, but subsequently, I mean, I understand why it happened, and I understand, to an extent, how it happened, and what baffles me is how this. Here's the thing that amuses me about this stuff. Okay, so this took everybody completely by surprise. I mean, there had been no. In the mainstream media, there had been no indication that anything is like this going to happen. But in the 6 days since, we got it all figured out. What's happening next. We know for certain what's going to happen.
Exactly, because this part's moving here. This part's moving here. There's going to be two super conferences. All of a sudden, we know everything. No, and I'm with you. As soon as I saw John Wilner's name on it, I knew it was fact. That's just the way it is. If your name had been on, I would have said the same thing. So, Mike, I'll take this in a couple parts. So let's start with the basketball part of it, because obviously this is done for TV contracts and football and so forth. What about the basketball part of it? What can that mean for the Big Ten moving forward and then eventually with the NCAA tournament?
Well, I mean, I think it makes the league stronger, UCLA and USC. USC's been very good under Andy Enfield. They've had some terrific teams 2 years ago, made the Elite Eight. They've had some very good players there. They came very close. I was at the game in South Carolina that they played against Miami. It was a 7-10 matchup, and they had a great opportunity to win that game, and Miami wound up in the Elite Eight. So they had a very strong year this year. And UCLA in the Final Four 2 years ago, in the Sweet 16 this year, and again, very close to the Elite Eight, took Caleb Love having a career game, really, one that sort of seemed to come almost out of nowhere, that he had that ultimately defeated UCLA in the Sweet 16. So they've got a lot of those players back this year. Mick has recruited well. Mick Cronin has recruited well for next year, or for this year, I should say, for this season. Adam Bona was a top 15 player in the class of 2022. So they've got a lot going for them right now. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see, one, does being in the Big Ten open new recruiting avenues for UCLA? Because they can basically tell any player in the country practically that they can bring them close to home, whether it's in the East with the three schools that are there, whether it's in the Midwest, and of course, if they are Cali kids, then they'll be right there. They'll play a ton of home games at Poly. So I think that this offers UCLA, in particular, with their national brand, the opportunity to maybe more comfortably expand their recruiting reach than it already was.
In the world of super conferences, there are all sorts of theories of what can happen down the road. The NCAA tournament contract with Turner and CBS runs through 2032, and it's a little bit better than $1 billion per year. There's a magic and a charm to it that I think increases the value personally every year I see it. What is your thought on the NCAA tournament moving forward based on everything that's been happening?
Well, one of the interesting things of the when you think about it, Steve, is like now that the media has gone past the five power five and the imagined, remember when it was going to be four 16-team super conferences, the media convinced us it was going to be four 16-team super conferences, we're going to have that degree of symmetry in this environment? Yeah, that was a funny one.
Yeah.
But they rolled with that for a decade until they just abandoned it last week. In a way, it makes me think that the NCAA tournament is more secure than ever, because you can't have an SEC versus Big Ten basketball tournament and think that's going to be worth even on a per capita basis close to what the NCAA tournament is worth. So it doesn't make sense to abandon that.
Agreed.
Money is money.
Yes.
And if money weren't important, then UCLA and USC would still be in the Pac-12.
Right.
Because it's not that they're dying to play against the teams in the Big Ten. It's that it was basically ballpark double the money, if not more so. So so why would anybody involved at the higher levels, the power levels, whether it's two leagues, five leagues, whatever, however many leagues you want to say, why would they walk away from money if it's obviously so important as to enter a conference in which some of the teams are literally 3,000 miles away from you?
Well, I mean, the Big Ten has gone from Philadelphia to Lincoln to New York to Los Angeles. That's where it is now. And it's a national league. So let's get to an article that you wrote on Sporting News about possibilities of others. And the first one was Notre Dame. Notre Dame cherishes its football independence. They are in the ACC. What's your thought on that, if there even is anything?
Well, I think the first thing, Notre Dame, I was surprised, Steve. I hadn't really thought ever, since football is a secondary priority for me, I had never really thought or paid much attention to how much money Notre Dame was getting.
Yeah.
From NBC for their television rights for that Saturday broadcast. I was surprised when I saw that it was the figure I saw quoted was less than $20 million.
Right.
Now they obviously get more when you take in the road games they play. They get paid for those from whosoever contract it is, whether they're playing a Big Ten school or a SEC school or whoever. They get paid for those. They don't do those for free. But even if it pushes up their income, to the low 20s, and then you add in the payout from the ACC for their non-rev and men's and women's basketball, it still is less than $30 million. If the figure I was seeing was correct. So in a sense, I mean, what they're looking at is a difference of close to $100 million a year. Let's use that as a round figure, because it's not far from the truth, and it's and it's a convenient figure. That's $100 million a year to be independent over 10 years. Basically, it's a $1 billion decision.
Yes.
I mean, do they the question they have to answer for themselves? And, hey, you know, it may require no more than calling all the people into the relevant people into a boardroom saying, are we good with this? And them all saying, yep, we're good. I mean, it may be no more complicated right. than that.
Could be.
But it's something they have to think about. It's $1 billion. It's a lot of money. But they have resisted that in the past. It's just never been quite so stark before.
And I'll give you one other, and they are, of course, tied in with the grant rights, which most legal experts say is a pretty close to ironclad. But what kind of fit as a Big Ten team would North Carolina be?
Excellent. They fit the academic profile if you remove the episode from a decade or so ago.
Right.
You know, they're a member of the AAU. They have it's a great university. One of my nephews is an alum. It's a great university. So that's where it's. Remember, when the Big Ten begins these conversations, if it doesn't meet certain standards in that regard, they're not going to make the phone call. And SC and UCLA did certainly easily. And so that was not, so it was a very easy move for them to make. And Carolina would be as well. And I think that if you did, you know, if there were no grant of rights, North Carolina and Duke would be a very easy move for the Big Ten to make, and I think it might be the one move that they could make that might be, you know, adding to the bottom line. And I'm not sure that there are as many of those out there as my colleagues seem to believe.
I agree with you, Mike. You make an excellent point. It's a point I've been making on the show. You cannot make a move that actually creates smaller slices of pie. You have to make a move that makes a bigger pie where everybody gets bigger slices, or at least is, stays in the same neighborhood.
I don't think you make a move if it stays the same because,
yep.
you know, everybody else is like, you know, we're giving up a little exclusivity here. We want to be paid for that.
Yes.
If we're giving up our exclusivity, we've already taken it from, you know, 10 to 11 to 14, now 16, you know, the neighborhoods are a little less exclusive now.
That's right.
In the sense of who belongs. So if we get paid for that and it helps us, then it's worth it. But if it's just you're going to get the same money and now you're going to have more neighbors, not everybody's necessarily going to be excited about that idea.
And you are absolutely right. Spot on. The Big Ten basketball tournament has usually gone into Chicago. This year will be Chicago. Minneapolis will get into the mix in a year from now or 2 years from now. But it's been to Washington and Madison Square Garden. Can you picture either Los Angeles or Las Vegas for a Big Ten basketball tournament?
I cannot see the Big Ten going to Vegas.
Okay.
It just wouldn't be fitting with the image, A, and let's be honest, USC and UCLA are not in Vegas.
That's
so
right.
That may be where they staged their tournament before, and it was pretty cool for the last several years. But could I see it at the Staples Center one day?
Yeah.
It might be interesting for them to do that. The one problem that they would have is that it would certainly alter the time zones. I mean, all the players, you know, they're used to playing at certain times of the day. It would be interesting to see how they would handle a 9 a.m. game, for instance.
Yeah.
But I, you know, it'll be interesting to see whether they entertain that possibility. You know, when Jim Delaney was commissioner, it was important to him to say to the schools in the East, "You're a part of this thing." And I know that it bothered a lot of the Midwestern-based Big Ten fans because I heard from them. but I think that you know, if Jim were still there, that might be something that would be. I can say that it would be something that would be important. I'm not saying that Kevin Warren would not. I'm just saying I know what Jim's track record was. It wouldn't surprise me if Kevin Warren said, yeah, that worked for us to go to the Garden. It worked for us to go to D.C. Let's do this. You know, we'll work out the logistics of it, but let's do this to show the L.A. schools that they are part, very much a part of this organization and a very important part.
Yeah, the complaint about New York was that they had to accelerate the season to do it because they had to play a week before the Big East. The complaint about D.C. was, okay, why are we all here? And I remember my brethren in the announcing group was like, I had to fly here. I've always been used to driving. And I looked at the mic. I looked at the mic and said, you do know this is the first time I've ever driven, right?
Yeah, let me tell you, the New York thing, first of all, that week in the Garden was magical.
It was great. I mean, it was great.
Yes. You know, I've obviously covered a ton of games there writing, but it was the first time I've ever done TV from the Garden. It felt a little extra special. And then the following week, getting a chance to watch all the other tournaments for the first time in a while was just amazing. I loved it. So I would be an advocate of moving it up every year. I don't think your coaches would like that.
I know they would.
But
they'd
hate it. Time.
You and I would love it because I'm with you. I was the same way. It was magical. Of course, Penn State made the semis. And then I sat back on the, like, okay. And I just watched basketball. I vegetated.
And as we started this interview, Steve, it's all about us, you know. It's how much more work do we do? How much more fun do we get? You know, it's all about us.
I think we'll end it right there. I think it's a perfect way to end it. We might as well end right where we started because we understand what it's about.
Absolutely.
Mike, always a pleasure. You know how much the great respect I have for you.
Same here, Steve. Take care of yourself.
Mike DeCourcy, BTN Sporting News. Tony Knapp next here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory, great warranties. Also, pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee and a fabulous service department that takes care of routine oil changes, inspections, diagnostics. They handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Let's go to the coast now, to Los Angeles. The guy that's talked about this a lot, Tony Knapp. Tony, great to have you with us.
I wonder what we're going to be talking about today.
Well, let's see. Over the last 2 years, you have slipped in from time to time that USC was dramatically unhappy with the Pac-12 and even floated the idea, not of the Big Ten, right? But, I mean, be fair, but even independence. But they had to get out. What were the elements that drove USC to make the phone call?
Well, I'm going to give the long story so the listeners will understand what happened, because it actually involves a Big Ten GM, a recent Big Ten GM. When the Pac-12 negotiated their first TV deal, Bill Moose was the AD at Washington State. He was the splashy hire for Washington State, who had come out of retirement. He was originally the AD at Oregon, who brought Oregon to prominence. Now, you could argue, and I'm not going to pull punches here, that Bill was just in the right place at the right time because he had Mike Bellotti as a coach and he had Phil Knight writing big checks. Mm-hmm. Now, Bill is a very old school guy, does not believe in analytics or any of that stuff. When they negotiated the deal, Bill was very vocal that USC and UCLA should share all the revenue equally with the rest of the schools. Now, USC and UCLA pointed to what we talk about a lot, the English Premier League. They said, no, the most the most common example pointed to is that where the top five clubs get a lion's share of the revenue, because the belief was the healthier they are, the better they do, the more money there will be for everybody else.
And I now, I will slip in that this has been the Texas deal with the Big 12 for a long time. So we'll go from there.
Exactly. So what happened was the LA teams were furious about this, because once they started sharing the revenue, because back then the revenue split wasn't as exaggerated as it is now. Now it's the low $30 million for Pac-12 schools, low $50 million for Big Ten schools. They're saying that the Big Ten schools could get up to $80 to $100 million a year in the new TV deal coming up. Now, what happened after that infuriated the LA schools even more. So Bill Moos takes the money, builds a new stadium, and hires Mike Leach. Right? Two things that Washington State cannot afford. But they're only affording it on the backs, in the eyes of USC, of USC. Meanwhile, across town, UCLA is going way underwater. They are running a huge deficit on their athletic department. Nobody's going to games at the Rose Bowl. And they can't keep up with what's happening, right? So a couple of dominoes fell that led to this phone call happening. The NCAA cracks down on USC, and USC is saying, look, maybe we don't need the NCAA. Maybe we align with this belief that the SEC and the Big Ten have, that one day we don't need the NCAA anymore. We're just going to create a super league, and that's going to be driven by the college football playoff. So they essentially crack down on SC. SC can't get out of its own way for 10 years. They suck. Meanwhile, UCLA is trying to find a lifeboat, and they can't find one. The Pac-12 doesn't take the deal with ESPN, which might have helped UCLA out. But then the Under Armour thing occurs.
Right.
So for the listeners who don't know what's happening, Under Armour...
$280
million. Right. And Under Armour just walks, says, we're not going to pay it. We're going to kill the deal. We have an out clause in it. Let's all see you in court. UCLA is in dire straits at this point. They are underwater on athletics, to the point that they might have to follow the route that Stanford took 2 years ago when they cut 11 sports, right? Now, Stanford went back and said, maybe we're not going to cut the 11 sports. They got some endowment money. They got some people to pay for it. But that's what led to the phone call happening, right? It hasn't just been a short-term, like, you know, we're reading all today about how six more Pac-12 schools are trying to call the Big 12, and Kevin Warren's phone's been ringing off the hook. And that's all kind of reactive stuff by other schools.
Right.
USC and UCLA were forced into this position by incompetent leadership at the Pac-12 level, by the NCAA cracking down on USC, and by selfish idiocy by Bill Moos, who, you guys will know him because he left Washington State and went to Nebraska,
right,
and that football program didn't necessarily flourish under him. So this is what's led to this. We've been saying for a long time that USC was going to do something, right? I didn't think it was going to be the Big Ten, but it makes total sense if that's what the Big Ten's going to do.
In fact, you floated the idea of independence.
Yeah, and multiple times.
So now what has happened with the Big Ten is this. Well, let me take it back one step. Fox is located in Los Angeles. What was their role in the phone calls?
So all of this is being driven by Fox and ESPN. And you've noted this a lot, as to people are talking about some crazy ideas of who's going to go where. Fox is in the room with the Big Ten, right? They negotiate on the side of the table as the Big Ten. And they're interested in drawing, as we've talked about this, drawing as much and as many eyeballs to their football product as is possible. Now, where they're kind of locked out is at the ACC, because they have the grants rights there until 2036.
Mm-hmm.
So Clemson, Miami, and those schools are stuck right now. So Fox and ESPN are essentially looking at creating two super leagues, which, there's again, there's a template for this. This is what happened with English soccer.
Yes.
Right? Everybody talks about, oh, there was no, you know, the Pac-12 has been around for so long, and there's tradition in this, that, and the other thing. There's 100 years of transition in English, of tradition in English soccer, until 1994, when Sky Sports came in and played the Fox role, waved a bunch of money in front of everybody and changed the world, right? That's exactly what's happening here. Except for what's interesting is in England, one network won out.
Yes.
And here, there's two networks winning out with two different leagues.
For Fox, the Big Ten has now gone from Lincoln to Philadelphia. It now goes from New York to Los Angeles.
Los Angeles.
What kind of difference does that make in how Fox approaches this? And especially, does the Big Ten, quote, now need ESPN?
Well, the question is subs, right? It's if you look at what's happening with subscriber media, people are losing subs all over the place, except for live sports.
Yes.
Right? This is the exact argument we just made about USC and UCLA with Washington State, right? Fox is looking at this and saying, USC and UCLA, the Big Ten, are the ones driving revenue for us. They are the ones keeping subs for ESPN and ABC on the SEC side, and they're the ones keeping subs for Fox on the Big Ten side. So it just turns out that you had these assets that were horribly undervalued, right? They're looking at this and saying, you know, there was an article a couple of years ago that talked about LeBron James and how they were paying him, I forget what, like $35 million at the time. But he's really worth $85, right? It's just that, you know, the things in place wouldn't allow him to make that money. I think what they're starting to realize is that, you know, the haves and the have-nots are a broader separation than we thought. And you need to have a setup where the haves and the have-nots share revenue, but it's very clear that the haves aren't floating the have-nots to the point where Bill Moose is hiring Mike Leach for $8 million a year and building a stadium in a place where they can't afford it,
right?
And that's what's happened in English soccer. I keep pointing to English soccer because I think that's the most similar parallel to what's happened here when it comes to TV money and the like. And what happened there is you have a breakaway league, which is essentially what the SEC and the Big Ten are going to be, and that breakaway league is making all of the money, and then you have leagues below it that there's a door open for them, and you have to try to find a way to build that out with a bowl system or whatever else.
What has been the reaction in your neck of the woods in Los Angeles to this happening?
You know, it's interesting because there's so much arrogance. I hate to say it because I'm a USC grad, but there's so much arrogance on the USC front, especially in the fan base, that they're kind of like, you know, we feel special and we love it. There has been almost no pushback on, oh, we're going to lose our traditional rivalries with, you know, Cal and Stanford and whatever else. They're looking forward to the whiteout game.
Yeah.
Right? Like, hey, we get to have a whiteout game. Like, we want to go do this.
Right?
We don't care about that. So that's been the feedback. UCLA is in dire straits right now. I mean, if you read what the AD has been talking about, he's talking about the Olympic sports. He's saying, hey, we're literally using this money so that we can keep the Olympic sports alive.
Well,
so we can go win national championship number 120, right?
They
win a bunch of them.
They lost $62 million in the pandemic. The other element, too.
Right. And so the most interesting about all of this and all the politics that are behind it is that Cal and UCLA were separated, and it was allowed by the Board of Chancellors.
Right.
And what's really interesting right now is the person in charge of the Pac-12 is UW's president, newly appointed.
Yes,
so
that's right.
The conversation is that UW and Oregon are going to be the next most likely to go somewhere. But talk about a conflict of interest. Like, she's responsible for keeping the schools together. And what everybody's looking at right now is saying, okay, well, you have two Bay Area schools who just really aren't that committed to sports. They have tremendous traditions behind it, but Stanford's already started cutting some of their sports. Their new stadium, they cut the when they refurbished Stanford Stadium, they cut the attendance by half.
Mm-hmm.
It only fits 38,000 people now, as opposed to 80,000 back when it hosted the Super Bowl.
Yep.
Like, theoretically, people are saying it might be the end of college sports in the Bay Area. Like, Stanford and Cal might just say, we don't want to do it anymore. We don't care.
Right.
So it's really dire straits for the Pac-12. And, you know, we knew that USC was going to do something. The assumption was UCLA would probably go with them because of basketball. But nobody knows what's happening going forward with the rest of these schools.
Maryland, Rutgers, and Nebraska, when they entered, had to go into a seven-year integration. And when it came to getting a full share, now Rutgers has borrowed so much money along the way from the Big Ten that their full integration actually does not happen until 2027.
27, yes.
Yeah. That's always been my argument. If I were sitting there and I'm Mike Bone, I'm sitting there saying, you're telling me Rutgers is getting 2.5 times the TV money USC is?
Right. Yeah.
Right. Do you have any information at all that when this TV deal is brokered, would USC and UCLA be immediately fully vested?
So I had a chance to catch up with Mike multiple times. I actually watched the NFC Championship game with Mike. Like, we were in a suite together and talked for 2 hours.
Right.
Mike has a very different approach to USC than anybody that's been here in the last 20 years. Mike is a full believer that they are at that level of blue blood, and they can make demands of that level. Now, keep in mind, this was prior to him hiring, or no, I'm sorry, it was right after he hired Lincoln Riley, right? I cannot imagine that he's going to take a backseat to anybody, given the way that I've heard him speak, given what he's talked about in bringing USC's athletic department to excellence and breaking away and breaking the chains of tradition, right? Mike was very open with me that, you know, they were looking at, I forget which one, a former basketball player that's a Trojan great for a coaching gig, and he just came right out and said, we don't do that at USC anymore. That person is not qualified to win, right? We are here to win championships. And we haven't had that kind of person at USC in a while. I would be shocked if Carol Fulton and Mike Bone don't have a faster road to equality.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll be that fast. I mean, Nebraska, you know, when Nebraska made the move, we're in a better position than, you know, maybe Nebraska's in now. But I would be shocked if they took that long.
Let me put it to you this way, Tony. Because the Big Ten's negotiating the contract now, and there'll be 1 year, obviously, where USC and UCLA are not in it. Everybody's going to get gigantic slices of pie from the addition because they're there. To me, that is justification for them being a full partner right away. That's me.
Yeah, right. I think so. I think, you know, where the leverage is, you would have to assume that USC is not stupid, and they probably did talk to the SEC, right? There's no way this was a singular negotiating point,
right?
I don't believe that that's something that they would do. Now, that said, USC is not in the strongest spot, right? I mean, you're in a situation where you're making $31, $32 million a year. You have to stick around. And the Pac-12 is going to try to negotiate their TV deal now. I feel so bad for George Kliarkov. I mean, talk about, I mean, there's going to be case studies written about how incompetent Larry Scott was.
Yes.
And I think the only thing that's more incompetent, as you pointed out correctly, is the grants rights with the ACC.
Yes.
I think if you are Miami, Clemson, and those teams right now, you are terrified of the future.
Yep.
And, you know, we've been reading a lot of legal briefs on that grants right, and there's no way out of it.
People have been looking
for a way to break it.
I've read, just like you, I've read a lot about it, and in reading it, it's almost ironclad. And that's,
there's no way out.
So what of the Rose Bowl now? Now, I'm going to start with this. I think the Rose Bowl is a great site for the Big Ten championship game. I'll start with that part.
Absolutely.
With that part of it. And I think it brings a level of excitement by going there. With all due respect to Indianapolis, which is great at holding championships.
I love that town. Yeah.
Great town. So well set up. I mean, everything. But I see the Rose Bowl in that spot. Now, what about the Rose Bowl game itself? Because, boy, you know how I feel about it. I mean, two of the greatest experiences of my life have been sitting in a booth and broadcasting a game there and looking around saying, I can't believe I'm here.
So there are theories on this from people who know. Here is the theory currently. The theory is that they are working toward an end game, which is different than what we will see in the short run. And that end game is actually a Big Ten playoff. So if you do theoretically end up at 18 to 24 schools, it's going to be impossible to have everybody play a level schedule through the year, right?
Mm-hmm.
The theory is that the big dollars are in a couple of non-conference games early in the season, you know, crossover games. Mm-hmm. Then you have a shortened schedule in conference with multiple divisions, and you actually have four teams make a Big Ten playoff. And then there's a Big Ten championship game. That's one of the paths that they're looking at. The other path they're looking at is, since there's going to be the expanded playoff, there's going to be a rotating Big Ten championship game, and the hope is that the extended playoff will roll into the Rose Bowl as often as possible.
Okay.
That's what I've been told.
Okay. I have to ask you about Apple. Apple got in, and this is going to connect to the Big Ten.
Yep.
Apple put together its long-term deal, 10 years with MLS. And it was the interesting part was, if I were MLS, I'd have had it run through 26 and then parlayed the World Cup being in this country for that. That's just me. I mean,
right?
But Apple now suddenly wants to rejoin the fray on the Big Ten. What can a bidding war of Amazon and Apple mean to rights for the Big Ten based on what has just happened?
History doesn't repeat itself, but people do, right? In 1994, there were two major players bidding on English Premier League rights. Now, I know everybody's rolling their eyes and saying, stop talking about the Premier League, but I'm going to talk about the Premier League because I think that's what matters here with Apple, right?
The two of them are parallels. You have to bring it up.
Yeah. So the two bidders at the time, they were so afraid of having TV rights that for the first 3 years of the Premier League, they wouldn't show the first half of the games, right? Because they were afraid that it was going to eat away ticket and concession dollars. But what was interesting about it is one of the bidders was a satellite company, which didn't have anywhere near the coverage that BSkyB did, which at the time was just Sky Sports. They didn't turn into BSkyB until a few years later. But they saw the opportunity of where this was going to be in 3 to 5 years, and therefore they bid the number up so much higher than the five clubs ever believed it was going to be. I don't know the exact number. I think like they were expecting £200 million. It ended up at £450 million, right? Apple is smart. Apple has more money than any company in the world. Apple is looking at playing the long game here, as proven by them doing a 10-year deal with MLS. Apple going into a bidding war on this with Amazon, creating essentially a whole new category on top of what Fox and ESPN are doing, who knows what the number is, right? Like, sometimes we see these numbers and we think $400 million for, you know, college football, or $400 million for, you know, British soccer rights is absurd. And now you look at what the number is, you say, hey, that was a bargain. It's the same thing everybody says when Instagram got bought by $1 billion. Everybody thought, you know, that's a bounty. It was a bargain. Same thing when Google bought YouTube, right? There's precedence for a lot of these things where people are looking at what that kind of content delivery and consumption is going to be in 5 to 7 years. And we just talked about how perhaps the rights to a Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State, USC were just so dramatically undervalued that somebody who sees that has a massive competitive advantage and they're okay to overpay. Like Steve Ballmer paying $2 billion for the Clippers. We all thought he was insane at the
time. Yes.
Now you look at the pricing and that's about where it is.
Oh.
Right?
Exactly.
So
I mean, the Broncos are going to are 4.6.
4.6, right? Chelsea's $5 billion, and that wasn't the biggest bid.
Yep.
So I just think that Apple getting involved in this creates the biggest boogeyman there is for Amazon and everybody else in the space, because Apple has the money, the hardware, the software, and the distribution, and the distribution goals to put games on your phone, right? And to own it themselves, which has always been their goal. You know, all the way back to when Jobs and Wozniak started the company, their belief was tight integration vertically from soup to nuts. And if they believe that they can tightly integrate Big Ten football all the way down to your Apple device at any time, they're going to do it. And they're going to pay a lot of money to do that too. So, I mean, if I was the Big 12 or the ACC, I'm not an underspoken person. I have no idea what they do next. I have no idea.
No, I mean,
Kevin Warren, Jim Delaney, these guys, I mean, it's incredible the job they did. They've lapped Larry Scott.
One last question. Over the years, television rights, any kind of media rights, have been based around markets.
Right.
And that goes for streaming, too, because, you know, guess where people live? Markets. But what has, in essentially branding and brand power, meant on top of markets and moves that we are seeing?
You know what's interesting about college football is it does kind of run against the theory that we hear all the time on the media side with, like, NBA basketball, right?
Right.
If you look at football in general, like, Green Bay is a national draw. But, you know, the argument is constantly in baseball and basketball that the small markets can't compete. So there's this reality that eyeballs and consumer spend are at such a granular local level that the brands are interested in those as they're combined together. So for college sports, for example, there's a company called Learfield. And what Learfield does, this is just for the listeners, I know you're aware of Learfield. what Learfield has done is they've said, look, having all of these universities out there trying to sell their own rights and their own sponsorships is a little bit foolish, because if I'm like Nissan, I don't want to say, hey, I want to leverage college football, so I'm going to go call 106 different universities and negotiate 106 different sponsorships. So Learfield sends out their team to all these local teams. They negotiate local deals, local sponsorships, you know, all the ones we hear regularly, but they also give the power to leverage the entire organization at once. So Nissan, when they did their 106 team deal with college football and college basketball, they just did the deal with Learfield, and Learfield brought them all of the schools. The brands seeing these teams consolidate into a conference who can consolidate the rights, the media rights, the sponsorship rights, the branding rights into one place, makes it easier for them to spend money. It makes it easier for them to leverage it. It makes it easier for what we talked about, and it's a great segue because it's what we talked about at the beginning of the call, right? If USC and Washington State came to an agreement where they said, look, we are interested in the success of Washington State, the same way Arsenal is interested in the success of Nottingham Forest.
Right.
But you're not bringing the same sponsors, money, and power to the table, so let's split this up in a way that we all win. That if I get $75 million, you get $30 million as opposed to none. Right? And so that's the power of the branding in this and how businesses look at it, because there's always going to be the local, you know, auto parts shop or construction company or law firm who's going to say, look, I mean, I'm an Alabama grad. I love Alabama. I'm going to sponsor with Alabama. I'm going to sponsor all the local shows. Like, I am a local brand, and this is what I'm doing. But then as those expand out, it gets more complicated and difficult. And if you can own those rights in one sophisticated place, it's a better experience for everybody, and there's a lot more money in it.
You're the best. We will talk again soon, because there's a lot more to talk about with all this and other areas too.
And we get to see each other in person a lot more,
my friend.
This
a lot
is great
more.
Great news.
Yeah, it's great. It's one of the first things I said to somebody. I said, I get to see Tony more out of this. This is great.
Yeah. I texted our buddy Dave. I said, hey, I'm reserving my whiteout tickets right now, partner. Those are mine.
Perfect. Perfect. You're in.
Oh, I love it.
Tony, thanks so much. Appreciate you so much. We will talk shortly.
Okay, we'll talk soon. Thanks, guys.
Tony Knopp joining us from Los Angeles. A little bit of, I think the hour is a little bit of radio gold, don't you think?
110%.
Hope it gives everybody a better perspective on where we are with all this. Do I have to take another break here, or are we taking to the top here?
Yeah, we got to squeeze one more break in.
Okay, then we'll do that now on News Radio 1070 WKOK.